Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 93.
Let's start where Kong Ming did, which was, frankly, a bit of overconfidence leading to, well, a setback.
A significant setback. He sends Zhao Yun, the Silver Spear, a legend, to attack Tian Shui.
And Kong Ming thinks he's got it all mapped out, right? Anticipated every move, planned a classic flanking maneuver.
Yeah, he felt secure in his strategy. But he hadn't factored in Jiang Wei, this young, brilliant strategist serving the Tian Shui prefect, Ma Zun.
Jiang Wei sees right through it. He spots Kong Ming's mysterious design, the Swanji, almost immediately.
He doesn't just see it. He counters it. And decisively, he suggests this incredibly bold counter ambush.
Not a huge force either, right?
No, that's key. Only 3,000 elite troops. He tells Ma Zun, basically, stay close, about 30 lies out, be ready, but don't risk the whole garrison.
Smart. Keep the city safe, but set the trap.
Precisely. So Zhao Yun rides up to the city, expecting them to just fold. And instead, he gets mocked. Liang Zhu, the city guard, pretty much laughs at him, tells him he walked right into Jiang Wei's trap.
And then chaos. Fire breaks out, the ambush is sprung, and suddenly, Zhao Yun finds himself fighting Jiang Wei directly.
Now, this duel is really telling. Zhao Yun, even if maybe past his absolute prime, is still Zhao Yun, a formidable warrior.
Absolutely. But the text says he was greatly astonished, because Jiang Wei, his energy, his focus, it just grew stronger with every exchange. It wasn't just skill. It was this relentless intensity.
So Zhao Yun, the veteran, isn't just stopped cold.
He's actually forced to retreat. He needs backup from Zhang Yi and Gao Xiang just to get away safely.
Wow, so this isn't a draw. It's a clear defeat for Kong Ming's initial strategy, orchestrated by someone he hadn't even really considered.
And that's the turning point for Kong Ming. He doesn't dwell on the failure or blame Zhao Yun. His genius isn't asking the right question immediately. Who could possibly see through my plan?
And when he learns about Jiang Wei, this figure described as, what was it, Wen Wuxuanquan's Yongzi Bei?
Complete in civil and military arts, intelligent and courageous.
Yeah.
And importantly, known for his filial piety, his devotion to his mother back in Xicheng.
That's when Kong Ming realizes Tian Shui, the city, it's irrelevant now.
The man is the target. The entire strategy shifts.
Okay, so battlefield defeat turns into, what, a recruitment drive?
Essentially, yeah. But the most high-stakes, complex recruitment drive imaginable. The focus shifts entirely from military conquest to psychological acquisition.
And Kong Ming himself sums it up, doesn't he? Something about army strength?
Right. Bing Bu, Zai Jiu, Zai Lin Zi, Liao Qin Er. And army strength is not in its numbers, but in its direction. He basically throws away the standard military playbook.
And instead targets Jiang Wei personally, using his strengths, like his filial piety, against him.
Exactly. It becomes this intricate three-part plan aimed at completely isolating Jiang Wei, professionally, personally, logistically.
Okay, let's break that down. First prong, logistics.
Right. He sends Zhao Yun, repurposed now, to attack Shanggui. That's where the Green and Treasury are.
Cut off the supplies.
Cut off the supplies. Make it impossible for Jiang Wei to sustain any kind of resistance, even if he wanted to. Strip away his military options.
Okay, prong two, the family trap. This one feels audacious.
It really is. He orders Wei Yan to fake an attack on Xicheng, where Jiang Wei's mother lives.
But the instructions are specific, right?
Incredibly specific. Let Jiang Wei enter the city, playing on his need to rush back and save his mother, and then slam the gate shut behind him.
Turning his virtue into the mechanism of the trap? Wow.
It isolates him physically from his troops back in Tian Shui at the critical moment.
And the third layer, the mind games.
Information warfare, pure and simple. Kong Ming captures another commander, Xia Hu Mao, someone whose word would likely be trusted.
And lets him go.
Offers him freedom, yes, but plants a seed. He tells Xia Hu Mao that Jiang Wei had already offered to surrender to Xu, but only if Xia Hu Mao was released first.
So he's giving Xia Hu Mao a reason to believe Jiang Wei might betray them, even before anything actually happens. Pre-framing the narrative.
Perfect sequencing, as you said. Planting the justification for betrayal with a panicked but credible messenger.
Okay, the pieces are in place. Now, the execution. How does Kong Ming make this stick?
Flawlessly.
Yeah.
Layer upon layer. Xiao Mao flees, naturally, and almost immediately bumps into people from the Tian Shui area.
Who just happened to be there.
Well, they're Kong Ming's agents, of course.
Yeah.
And they're all repeating the exact same story, consistently.
Sure. Which is?
Jiang Wei surrendered. He's gone over to Zhuge Liang. Yan's already taken Xicheng. They're looting the place.
So this confirms Jiahu Mao's planted story and makes it sound like Jiang Wei's home base is already lost. Double blow.
Precisely. So Xiahou Mao rushes back to Ma Zun and Liang Xiu in Tianshui, reports what he heard, what Kong Ming told him. And because it all matches, because everyone's saying the same thing.
They buy it. They completely accept that Jiang Wei has turned traitor.
But Kong Ming isn't done. Rumor isn't enough. He needs visual proofs or something that looks like it.
The fake Jiang Wei.
Exactly. That night, under the cover of darkness, he sends a soldier who looks similar to Jiang Wei to ride up near the Tianshui walls.
And this imposter shouts up to the defenders.
Shouts right at Xiahou Mao and Ma Zun. Something like, "Hey, I surrendered to get you released. Why'd you break your promise? I'm a Shu general now."
Oh, that's brutal. In the confusion and darkness, that seals it.
Absolutely. The rumor told them, the imposter showed them. For Ma Zun and Xiahou Mao, there's zero doubt left. Their brilliant young general is now the enemy.
Okay, so while Tianshui is convinced Jiang Wei is a traitor, what's happening to the real Jiang Wei?
He's walking right into the rest of the trap. His supplies are cut, remember? So he's forced into a desperate move trying to raid Wei Yan's supply train.
Which is probably also a setup.
Of course. The carts are easily captured, seemingly abandoned. But as soon as he has them, boom, ambush. Zhang Yi and Wang Ping hit him hard.
He fights his way out.
He does, but he's losing men, he's exhausted, and he races back towards Xicheng, desperate to get to his mother.
Only to
Shu banners flying over the city. Wei Yan seized it while Jiang Wei was busy with the fake supply raid. The filial piety trap snaps shut.
So he's cut off from supplies, his command thinks he's a traitor, and his home, his mother's city, is captured by the enemy.
Total isolation. It's devastating. He makes one last attempt, rides with his few remaining men, maybe only 10, towards Tianshui.
And Ma Zun?
Believing the imposter, believing the rumors, orders his archers to fire on Jiang Wei, his own commander.
Unbelievable. So Jiang Wei flees again. Where does he go?
Tries the last possible friendly city, Shanggi. But Lang Qin there has also heard the confirmed news of his betrayal. Calls him a fan Guo Xi, a traitor to the state, and fires arrows at him too.
There's literally nowhere left for him to go. Betrayed by everyone.
Completely alone. The text says he cries out to heaven, totally defeated, realizing how effectively Kong Ming has destroyed his reputation and his options. He just rides off towards Chanyan, broken.
The operation is a success. Jiang Wei is neutralized and isolated. But Kong Ming isn't quite finished, is he?
No, there's one final act. Jiang Wei is utterly exhausted, Ren Kun Ma Fa, man and horse worn out. He runs right into one last ambush, this one led by Guan Xing.
So this looks like the final capture, the military cleanup.
It could be.
Yeah.
But that's not Kong Ming's endgame here. He doesn't just want a prisoner.
Right. He wants a follower, a successor even.
Exactly. So in this moment of chaos and final defeat for Jiang Wei, everything stops.
Mm.
A small carriage appears on a nearby hill.
And sitting in it?
Is Kong Ming. Instantly recognizable. Silk hat, crane cloak, feather fan. The image of total calm and control amidst the wreckage of Jiang Wei's life.
And he doesn't issue commands or threats. He just asks a question.
A very simple, direct question. Bo qu xi xi shi bu xiang.
Yeah.
Bo Yu, at this point, why do you still not surrender?
What can Jiang Wei even do? He has nothing left.
Nothing. No allies, no army, no reputation, no home. He gets off his horse, lays down his weapon, he surrenders.
The psychological campaign is complete, but then Kong Ming's reaction is different.
Profoundly different. This is where you see the real goal. Kong Ming immediately comes down from the carriage. He doesn't act like a conquering general.
He takes his hand.
Takes Jiang Wei's hand and says something truly remarkable, basically. Yeah. Ever since I left my humble hut, I've been searching for someone worthy to pass my life's learning on to, but I hadn't found the right person until now. Meeting you, Bo Yu, my wish is fulfilled.
Wow. After utterly destroying him, isolating him, using his deepest loyalties against him.
He pivots instantly to mentorship, to reverence almost. The cruelty of the trap was just the means to an end. The end was not capture, it was recruitment. To humble him, break him down, yes, but only to make him receptive to becoming Kong Ming's intellectual heir.
Kong Ming needs to secure territory, right? Get those supply routes open. But he doesn't just lay siege to these cities for months. He takes three key places, Tianshui, Shanggi, and another one almost without a fight. How does he manage that?
Well, the genius here is playing on the paranoia that already exists within the Wei command structure. Mm-hmm. Kong Ming needed Tianshui. It was a major hub. So he and his new recruit, this brilliant young strategist, Jiang Wei, they cook up a plan.
Jiang Wei, right, the phoenix later on.
The very same. They decide to exploit the, let's say, insecurity of two local Wei commanders there, Yin Xiang and Liang Shi.
And the way they do it is just pure psychological theater, isn't it? Jiang Wei writes these two secret letters.
Very vague, kind of alarming messages, hinting at some big conspiracy.
And then just shoots them over the city walls attached to arrows.
Exactly. Straight into Tian Shui. And wouldn't you know it? They land right where they need to, in the hands of the city bosses. Specifically, the military governor, Ma Zun, and this is crucial, the emperor's son-in-law, Xia Humao.
Ah, Xia Humao. Being related to the emperor gives you status, sure, but not always skill.
Right at all. He's high status, definitely. But the sources paint him as, well, inexperienced. Pretty jumpy. Naturally paranoid.
So these two guys, Ma Zun and the emperor's relative, Xia Humao, they get these cryptic letters.
Yeah, they just panic. Immediately assume Yin Shang and Liang Shu are about to defect to Kongming.
You don't even, what, check the handwriting? Try to verify anything?
Nope. No pause. They just assume betrayal. They grab a few troops, abandon their posts, and literally flee the city.
Wow.
They end up hiding out in the territory of the nearby Kangku tribes.
And that sudden flight is the signal, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Yin Shang and Liang Shu see their leaders run, and they just open the city gates. Kongning walks right in. Tian Shui is his, basically for free.
Incredible. And then it just snowballs from there.
Instantly. Liang Zhu then convinces his own brother, Liang Qian, who controls Shang Yi, to surrender too.
So boom, three major cities fall. Just by using paranoia and knowing the weak spots in the enemy leadership?
It's a huge strategic win, no question. But there's an interesting moment right after Kongming's generals are like, hey, why didn't we chase Xiao Humao?
Yeah, the emperor's son-in-law. That would have been a massive political prize, surely.
You'd think so. But Kongming has this amazing reply. It really defines, you know, effective leadership and spotting real talent. Still relevant today, I think.
What does he say?
He says basically, letting Xiao Mao go, that's like letting a duck go. But now I have Boyu. That's Zhang Wei's cell name. Huh. Now I have a phoenix.
The duck versus the phoenix. Wow, that comparison just hits, doesn't it? Let's unpack that. Why is getting a strategist like Zhang Wei so much better than nabbing the emperor's relative?
Well, think about it. Xiao Mao, he's just a high status problem. Capturing him, sure, it scores some temporary political points, maybe some bragging rights, but he offers zero actual strategic value. He's a duck. Common.
Right.
Jiang Wei, though, he's this brilliant young mind. He actively chose to defect because he saw something in Kongming's cause.
Yeah.
Maybe the moral high ground, the potential. He's the phoenix.
Yeah.
Unique, powerful, irreplaceable.
So Kongming understood that war isn't just about grabbing land or figurehead.
Exactly. It's fundamentally about talent, human capital. Getting Jiang Wei meant getting future victories. That's long-term thinking.
It's a fantastic lesson, focusing on the knowledge asset, the person, rather than the shiny short-term political trophy. But, okay, this huge loss, three cities gone, the emperor's son-in-law running scared the news, hits the Wei Emperor Cao Rui in Luoyang. That kind of humiliation demands a response, a big one.
Oh, absolutely. The political heat is intense. They scramble, pull together a massive force. We're like 200,000 troops.
200,000. Okay, who's leading this counterattack?
They appoint Cao Zhen as the grand commander. He's a solid senior general. And Guo Wai, who's known as a really sharp strategist, he's made vice grand commander. But then there's this third appointment. Notice who else they bring along.
Ah, yeah. They bring in Wang Lang, the minister of education, as the military advisor. And the source makes a point of his age, 76 years old.
76.
What does that signal? Pulling a 76-year-old academic, essentially, to the front lines.
It screams desperation, I think.
Yeah.
But also, it's about legitimacy. Wang Lang isn't there for tactics. He's there for the political show.
Political theater, right.
He's an elder statesman, a symbol of the Wei establishment. His job is to challenge Kongming on moral grounds.
And he's pretty confident about it, isn't he? Makes this huge boast.
Oh, yeah. He basically says, forget the 200,000 men. I don't need them. I can beat Kongming without a single soldier lifting a finger. Just give me one speech.
One speech to make the entire Shu army pack up and go home? That's bold.
It sets the stage perfectly for this incredible showdown at Kishan. The sources really paint a picture here.
Yeah, the visual contrast must have been striking. You've got this massive, imposing Wei army all geared up for battle.
And then there's Kongming, just calmly sitting in his little four-wheeled carriage, wearing simple scholar's clothes, the silk cap, the feather fan. It's almost serene against the backdrop of war.
The perfect setting for a war of words before the war of swords.
Exactly. And Wang Lang rides out first, ready to make good on his boast. His whole argument is designed to pull the rug out from under Kongming's entire campaign. He uses the big ideological weapon of the era, Heaven's Mandate. Tianming.
Okay, so what's the core of his argument? How does he use Tianming?
He essentially says, look, the Han Dynasty, it failed. It collapsed from the inside out. Yellow turbans, corruption, chaos, Deng Zuo, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven saw this failure, he argues, and deliberately shifted the right to rule the mandate to the Cao family who founded our Wei dynasty. Wei rules with virtue, brings stability, follows the ancient sage kings. We have legitimacy.
So the punchline is?
Therefore, Kongming, you're fighting against Wei. You're actually fighting against the will of heaven itself. It's futile. Just accept reality, take a title, maybe a marquiship, and surrender.
Wow. That's a powerful political argument, designed to hit morale hard before any actual fighting starts.
Definitely. But Kongming,
yeah.
Well, he's a master rhetorician himself.
Mm.
He doesn't get bogged down arguing the finer points of dynastic succession.
No, he goes straight for the jugular, doesn't he?
Yeah.
A moral counterattack, and it gets intensely personal.
Totally personal. He flips it. He agrees the Han court had problems. Yeah, corruption.
Yeah.
But he saves his real fire for the people who just stood by, or worse, helped the usurpers. He calls the officials rotten wood, beasts just eating their salary. And then he turns that fire directly onto Wang Lang.
He doesn't hold back, accuses him of being a corrupt flatterer, basically, someone who helped the rebels, the Nisei.
And this is where that famous tirade comes in. Just legendary insults.
What does he say?
Kongming just treads all the usual courtly politeness. He starts yelling at this 76-year-old statesman, calling him a hoary-headed commoner, gray-whiskered old thief. And then the killer blow. The psychological one. He asks Wang Lang, essentially, how are you going to face the spirits of the 24 emperors of the Han Dynasty in the afterlife after what you've done?
He's not just calling him a traitor to the state.
No, he's condemning his soul.
Yay.
Saying he's damned for eternity.
And the effect. We sometimes forget how powerful words, how rhetoric could be back then. What happens to Wang Lang?
It's immediate and devastating. The source says Wang Lang is just overwhelmed with rage and shame. Ki Min Sav Song, rage just filling his chest. He lets out this scream, apparently falls right off his horse, and dies on the spot.
Killed by a speech.
Incredible, isn't it? A 76-year-old statesman literally felled by emotional overload and moral condemnation.
It just proves Kongming's point, really. Rhetoric wasn't just talk. It was a force multiplier. It crippled Wei's morale right there.
Absolutely shattered it. So while the Wei forces are scrambling, dealing with Wang Lang's sudden death.
Right, Cao Zhen is trying to sort out getting the body ready for transport.
The vice commander Guo Huai, the pragmatist, he's already thinking ahead. He immediately tries to figure out Kongming's next move.
Okay, and this is where we get into those brilliant layers of strategy, the deception upon deception. So, level one, Guowai's prediction. What does he think Kongming will do now?
Well, he's a smart commander. The enemy's morale is broken. They're distracted by this unexpected death and, you know, the funeral arrangements. What's the logical next step for Kongming?
A night raid. Hit them while they're down and disorganized.
Exactly. It's the standard textbook move. Capitalize on the shock. Guo Huai anticipates this. Good military thinking.
So Huai sets up a counter plan. This is level two, the ambush. They decide to use Kongming's expected move against him.
Right. Cao Zhen and Guo Huai plan to turn the tables. They order their vanguard forces led by Cao Zun and Zhu Zan to actually raid the Shu camp first.
Okay.
But here's the trick. The main Wei camp itself is going to be a complete fake. Virtually empty. Just stacks of firewood to make it look occupied.
A dummy camp.
Pretty much. The idea is simple. Let the Shu raiders, who they assume are coming, walk into this empty Wei camp. Then, the main Wei forces, Cao Zhen and Guo Huai themselves, who are hiding just outside their own camp, will spring an ambush.
And the signal.
A signal fire lit from the main Wei camp once the Shu forces are supposedly inside the trap. It's a decent plan, quite deceptive against a standard night raid.
This is Kongming we're talking about. He's not thinking on level one or two. He's operating on level three, the meta strategy.
Precisely. He anticipated Guo Huai's anticipation. He knew they'd expect a night raid. He wanted Cao Zhen and Guo Huai to think he was planning exactly that.
So he plays into their expectation.
He does. Kongming's genius here is predicting the enemy's prediction and then using their own cleverness against them. He sets up this massive feint. Instead of sending his main force towards the Wei camp, he sends Zhao Yun and Wei Yan.
His most famous, most feared generals. The guys Wei would absolutely expect to lead a raid.
Exactly. He sends them on this huge looping detour, way off. Far away from the main action, takes them completely out of the immediate fight. Just to sell the idea that a raid might be coming from somewhere else or to confuse Wei scouts?
Could be both. But the main point is, they're not where Wei expects the main thrust to be. Meanwhile, Kongming sets up his own camp as a feint, just like Wei did.
Okay, so an empty Shu camp too.
Mostly empty. But crucially, he hides his real ambush forces, generals like Granxing, Zhang Bao, Ma Dai nearby, close to his own camp. And here's the masterstroke, the signal fire. The one Wei is expecting to see from the Wei camp to trigger their ambush. Kanming orders it to be lit from the Shu camp instead.
Oh, clever.
But only after the Wei vanguard forces, the ones raiding the Shu camp, have already started to retreat.
Okay, walk us through the climax. This sounds beautifully chaotic.
It is. So the Wei vanguard, Kaozun and Zuzan, they charge into the Shu camp, just as Guo Huai predicted someone would.
And we find it.
Empty. Nothing but firewood. Exactly like the trap they thought they were setting.
Ah, the irony. Okay, so they're disappointed, maybe confused. They turn back. They retreat. And the moment they do, bam, they run straight into the ambush. Kongming had waiting near his own camp. Guanxing, Zhang Bao, they hit him hard. Chaos erupts.
So Wei vanguard is already getting hammered and routed.
Mm-hmm. And just then, the small garrison Kongming left behind in his now empty Shu camp lights the signal fire.
The signal fire from the Shu camp?
Yes. Now, Cao Zhen and Guo Huai, remember, they're waiting patiently in ambush outside their own empty camp. They see the fire go up from the Shu position.
And they think?
Uh-huh. Our vanguard must be inside the Shu camp causing havoc. The raid is working. Time to flank them.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. They order their main force to charge forward, expecting to smash into the flank of the imagined Shu raiders attacking their vanguard. But instead, they collide head-on with their own vanguard troops, who are already retreating in complete disarray from Kongming's ambush.
So Wei forces are attacking. Wei forces.
Total confusion. Self-slaughter. The source uses the term Zidishiangsha. They were literally trampling and killing each other in the dark in panic.
Kongming achieved total victory with almost no effort on his part, just by making the enemy outthink themselves.
It's absolutely brilliant. He turned their own accurate prediction into the instrument of their defeat.
Just masterful. It really shows the difference, doesn't it? Guo Huai was a good strategist. He saw the likely move.
Right. But Kongming was a great strategist. He saw two, maybe three steps ahead. He anticipated the counter-anticipation. He basically forced Wei to execute the very plan that would destroy them.